Asia Expansion Explained. Der Podcast für innovative Unternehmen, die in Asiens Märkte expandieren möchten. Country Insights, Expertinnen-Know-how, Best Practice Cases und spannende Karriere-Talks für einen erfolgreichen Markteintritt.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zurück bei Asia Expansion Explained, der Podcast für österreichische Startups, die in asiatische Märkte internationalisieren möchten. Mein Name ist Lisa Stöger und ich bin Programmmanagerin des Global Incubator Network Austria. Und gemeinsam mit meinem Podcast-Co-Host Fabian Gems, Geschäftsführer von GEM Solutions, tauchen wir ein in die GIN-Zielregionen und geben euch wichtige Tipps und spannende Insights für eure Expansionsstrategie. Es ist die 58. Podcast-Folge hier bei Asia Expansion Explained und wir starten mit unserer neuen Rubrik, bei der sich alles um die aktuellen Trends und Hot Topics in Asien dreht. Wir haben heute ein Crossover und dafür haben wir zwei besondere Gäste eingeladen. Fabian, verrätst du unseren Zuhörern und Zuhörerinnen, wen wir heute erwarten?
Ja, Lisa, super gerne. Ist für mich auch eine besondere Geschichte, weil ich einen der beiden sehr gut kenne. Wir haben heute die Hosts des Podcasts The Great Fire Chat zu Gast. Kevin Shimoto und Ade Desandis. In ihrem Podcast dreht sich alles über die Neuheiten der chinesischen Technologie oder wie zum Beispiel auch das Metaverse in China ankommt. Und darüber möchten wir heute auch mit Ihnen sprechen. Beide sind trotz ihren jungen Jahren Old China Hands und können uns da sicherlich tolle Insights geben.
Genau so ist es und am besten lassen wir sie selbst berichten, worüber sich ihre aktuellsten Folgen von The Great Fire Chat drehen und welche technologischen Trends sie gerade in China beobachten können. Aber wir müssen jetzt ins Englische wechseln. So, welcome to our podcast, Kevin and Ade.
It's so great to have you all here today at our first crossover episode for Asia Expansion Explained. And it's a special delight for me because I know one of the two dudes that are going to come up quite well. We're going to talk about Meta, Metaverse and the current craze that is happening in Asia, in particular in mainland China about it. But without further ado, I would like to give you, Kevin, and you, Ade, the floor to introduce yourselves to our audience as well.
You said my name first, Kevin here, Kevin Shimoda. I am from Seattle, spent about 7 years in China, and I worked at WeChat for 4 years heading up their global marketing. Really enjoyed my time there, learned a lot on the frontier of China tech. And now I've written a book about it that I actually didn't tell you guys this. I have a publishing date now, finally, June 15th.
Amazing.
Check your bookstores, check your libraries. It's coming out. It's called The First Super App, and it's inside China and WeChat. So it's going to be fun. So yeah, that's me.
Yeah. And my name's Ade Desandis. I'm originally from California, from Silicon Valley. But I've been living now in China for 20 years, actually, running a software company. And I also do a lot of community organizing in the startup community. And I work as a founder, coach, and a startup advisor.
Wow.
And so Kevin and I have been doing the Great Fire Chat for the last year or so, talking about tech issues in China and sharing our thoughts about how we see how the landscape in China shapes the global economy and the trends that we see that are happening over here.
Thank you, Ade. Thank you, Kevin. We're going to put a link in the show notes to your Great Fireside Chat. Been following you for quite some time now, and I'm sure all our listeners are very interested to hear it as well.
That's fantastic. Thank you.
Lisa, what are we going to talk about today?
Yes, today's topic is probably an absolute buzzword over the last couple of months. And as Ade and Kevin are both Chinese experts, we want to talk about the metaverse, but also the Chinese approach to the metaverse. And we are very excited to have you here today. And also shout out to the Great Fire Chat. So great to see other podcasts for startups, entrepreneurs out there. So big recommendation from us. Yeah, let's dive into the Chinese metaverse, I guess.
Let's do it.
Kevin and Ade, when have you come across the metaverse for the absolute first time? Or how is the situation at the moment right now? Is really everybody speaking about metaverse and what is going to happen?
Yeah, I can speak briefly about that. What happened was, you know, Mark Zuckerberg changed the name of the company from Facebook to Meta, and that really flipped a switch in China. As soon as that happened, everyone in China started talking metaverse, metaverse, metaverse. I have to admit, I think a lot of people didn't really know what it meant or what they were really referencing. There's just kind of this vague idea of a digital world and a digital economy. And I think a lot of people see it as a new sort of trend. We have these various trends. You have, you know, different sort of bandwagons to hop into. And I think metaverse came in right just at the right time as people were looking for a new trend and everyone jumped in. Even city governments are making plans about metaverse, even though, you know, it's still very nebulous what it means.
That's super interesting. I want to hop in here. City governments are talking about metaverse in China?
Oh, yeah.
Really? That's maybe something that we have to explain to our listeners, because those who have not, I mean, we have also some CEO followers from my previous times who have some experience in China, but I don't know the city government of Vienna is talking about metaverse. So why is this in China?
Ade, you should talk about this one, because the metaverse, I'll just poke out a little bit here. The metaverse for me is so interesting because it's so difficult to understand. And I think I like the term, that term nebulous. I think it's such a buzzword and it's so many concepts thrown into one, kind of like, and it's kind of commonly seen to be related to Bitcoin and blockchain. And Bitcoin, that thing brought is actually about five or six innovations all thrown into one kind of currency. And then it has triggered other new innovations in crypto economics, blockchain, like those, the cryptography and digital signatures, double in digital signatures, decentralized ledgers. There's just so many things going out there. And metaverse seems like another term, which is the virtual field of where everyone's going to start interacting. What's interesting about the metaverse is it's, I think that we're not really going to recognize it until we're already there, which is how I kind of also feel about AI, artificial intelligence, where everyone's like, oh, is the computer going to take over? My kind of theory is when artificial intelligence reaches a point where it passes the Turing test and it's just like humans, at that point, computers aren't going to be very different from humans. In China, you already see people with little rings on their phones. And now it's like your phone is getting attached to your hand. And then it's slowly getting more and more built in. And then it's, you have Neuralink and it's attached to your brain. And by the time a computer is smarter than a human or as smart, we're not really going to be able to differentiate the two. We're going to be kind of interlinked. That's my own theory. But I'd love to hear Ade's example about, so going back to this kind of city governments talking about the metaverse, this really kind of abstract concept. I'm curious to hear this example, but I just know that China is so on the frontier of this stuff, of blockchain. They're doing the central bank digital coin. They're doing all of these things at just lightning speed, China speed. So yeah, Ade, what's that example?
Absolutely. I guess, yeah, to go back to Fabian's question, there's a lot of context there that I think is missing for Western audiences. And it's something we talk a lot about in our podcast, is how the government policy really does shape business in a way that it doesn't necessarily in the West. And so, you know, even though China is primarily a market-driven economy, the government has several levers that they can pull to sort of nudge industry in the directions that the government is intending to go. And they've been very, very aggressive with those levers recently. And so one of the things that we do talk about is, you know, if you listen to what the government says, especially what's coming from Beijing, from Xi Jinping and the central party, you can very well predict what are going to be the hot industries for the future. So in general, I mean, that's always just good practice. If you're doing business in China, listen to what the government is saying, what they want to see from industry, and see how your business plan can match that plan. And specifically for metaverse, it's all connected. So one of the tenets of the five-year plan, which came out last year, which is China's big plan for the next 5 years, right, is improving the digital economy. And so they want to promote anything that enables more citizens to earn money, to conduct commerce through the digital economy. And of course, that's not very well defined. What is a digital economy? And so it's left up to then regional governments to implement policies in their region to support the central government's policy goals. And so a city government can say, aha, what's this thing called metaverse? I don't know. Sounds great. Let's put it into our plan so we can attract people to our city who can do this metaverse thing. And so one of the examples that I read about was there's a district in Shanghai that is rapidly being built. It's one of these newer suburban areas where they're just building housing complexes after housing complex. And they made a partnership, the government public-private partnership with a company building 3D models in the metaverse and hired them to build a sort of a digital version of the city's sort of performing arts center. So you can now put on a VR headset and visit that performing arts center in the metaverse, if that's what you want to call it. Whether or not there will be anybody actually there is a very different story, very different question. But they actually built it, you know, it was funded by the government. And I think it's one of the ways that the local governments can say, can sort of take an initiative and say, we're doing our best to meet the central government's policy goals. And we're doing that by supporting businesses that are local to us that are innovating in technologies that will further the digital economy.
Very interesting. And I just want to stress the term digital economy, because probably that's the thing that metaverse or digital economy is such an broad phrase that probably also includes metaverse. And I also recently learned that it's not the metaverse. There are actually many metaverses, or we even don't know how many metaverses there might be out there. But I also have a quick question, because the government has a 5-year plan and they want to improve the digital economy, which might include the metaverse and metaverses. So how have the really big Chinese companies already adapted to this trend of metaverses? So speaking of TikTok, Tencent, Alibaba, have you seen already some trends or how the companies approach the metaverse?
Sure. I can speak a little bit about what I've seen. And so, for example, one thing that happened was, you know, they have tons of different products, and you know, this spans from games to videos to WeChat. And across all these platforms, they run a lot of advertising. One of the things that they started doing is, as soon as, you know, Meta became part of the vocabulary, they started pitching metaverse marketing solutions to their customers. And I actually had a chat with somebody who's working on some of this, and they were sort of complaining, saying, hey, you know, our boss said we need to kind of like shove metaverse into this. And we were just discussing about how, you know, what does that mean? What does it mean for Tencent? What does it mean for the customer who's buying sort of this advertising? And to put it in really concrete terms, what they were saying was basically they would build a 3D model of kind of like what happened in Shanghai. They would build a 3D model of something, maybe an AR model or even an NFT, because it all is kind of connected in this nebulous metaverse Web3 thing. You know, they offered to, you know, we'll have an avatar in a game that you can then get an AR model as an NFT, you know, attached to this. And it was all very complicated and confusing, but they're doing it. I mean, they're no joke diving headfirst into it.
Yeah, I think just to add what Ade said, I think that's super important. And so I want to stress it again for our listeners. Government matters in China.
Yeah.
Just be aware of it. And what was always very astonishing, because to be quite honest, when I came to China, I had very little knowledge of what China was all about, the real China. I had a portrait of what Western media tried to portray China, but I was never in China myself. So when I came there, this pragmatism, I would call it, to new things, this openness to new things, trying out new things and not over-regulating at the beginning. That's something that I really, really enjoyed in China, because a lot of the technologies, for example, WeRide AI, why are they testing their AI ride in Guangzhou in full traffic and cannot do that anywhere else? Is because the government is open. Okay, they know the risks. They know what can happen. But they also trust that the company is responsible enough to do this. So this is something that I just wanted to stress for our audience, because that's something that they might not know when you only listen to Western media talking about China and whatever other issues there might be with such a huge country.
Yeah, I completely agree with Bobby. That's something that's, you can say it to Western audiences, but it's so difficult to get Western audiences to really appreciate it. Because growing up in the United States, You hear people, you hear about policy and everything. And the reason why government matters in the US is because you're going to vote for something. That's important to be a part of democracy and everything, but it's more important from an ethical perspective. But in China, it's important from an economic perspective and you making money, your business working or not working perspective. A lot of things that happen in the US commonly isn't really going to affect my business and what I'm doing. But in China, they say, gun dang zhou, like walk with the party. You got to, the business has got to be walking the party line. And that's something we really stress on our podcast, probably too much, Ade, but it is just such a big point. I was doing partnerships at Tencent for 4 years. And when I talk with other companies, and even when I'm talking with other companies in China, but even when I'm talking with a company like BMW overseas, my colleagues will say, sure, we can do that, but let's make sure this project walks with the party, is walking the party line. It's something that the Chinese government wants to see. I think it's really, so it's very consequential, whereas in the US, it always felt like government was a bit inconsequential to business. Going back to Lisa's question about how companies are kind of adapting to this whole concept of the metaverse, I think first there might be a little question of, should Chinese companies adapt to the metaverse? Is it a thing, or is Zuckerberg just taking the wrong bet? Because I think a lot of people think Zuckerberg is losing it. I personally don't think Zuckerberg is losing it. I think that guy's awesome because he announced Facebook changing to Meta and going hard on the metaverse in a fencing outfit. And I just saw that somewhere. And people just think because he's just so weird and unique and nerdy, people just dislike him and everything. They kind of rag on him. I'm impressed he's taking big bets. A big criticism of big tech is them not taking big bets. Tech companies in Silicon Valley stop being risk takers. They're no longer startups. They're no longer innovating. I'm impressed by Facebook's move towards the metaverse. I think it is going to be a big thing. We're still trying to figure out what it is. So we were talking earlier about the digital economy in China. Does that cover metaverse? How much does that overlap? For me, I think the metaverse, it's kind of this virtual place where we're all going to be meeting up. Maybe it's not just virtual. There's artificial reality and then there's augmented reality, where it's kind of superimposed. It's in and out of the real world. Digital economy plus lifestyle and kind of social is what the metaverse is to me. And I think that really falls well under Tencent's camp. Tencent for a long time has kind of been this Facebook similar company. So when you're looking at Facebook going all in on the metaverse, you got to really first be looking at Tencent. They're the social company in China. They're kind of similar, they're equivalent, but very different. I think Tencent does see a lot of potential with the metaverse and they are making moves. So I just kind of think that question is like, how are they adapting to the metaverse? Well, who knows if it's actually a thing, right? Is it just Zuckerberg? You know, is it Zuckerberg's metaverse?
But what about, because you mentioned virtual reality, augmented reality, and also that we will be playing ourselves as avatars in a parallel universe. So this all leads to gaming, and the Chinese market is huge and gaming is a huge thing in China. So doesn't this actually mean that metaverse must be a thing in China in the end, eventually?
If I may jump in here before, because I think something that's very important to say is that, you know, back in the day, I think, I don't know how many years ago that was, Pony Ma and Mark Zuckerberg met. And Pony Ma was very much pushing this attitude of this super app, right? And Mark Zuckerberg didn't really understand it at that time. And years later, at some conferences, he said, well, should have listened to Pony Ma.
Yeah.
So maybe he wants to be the first mover now in the meta, and that's why he jumped so quickly on it.
Right.
It's because he didn't want to leave that field of innovation purely to Tencent and all the Chinese great companies that are popping up like mushrooms. I mean, Douyin, I mean, I'm now at TikTok. I mean, we do business with TikTok people from my insulation company, right? So it's crazy. What is happening in this field with the short videos, which to me at the beginning didn't make any sense. So that's how I see Meta, is like, okay, I don't understand it. I don't know what it's going to be good for, but we have to be able to respect it and we have to be able to really see what it's going to become. And I think this discussion we had before is to, okay, you don't want to be late to that party.
Yeah, it's funny. You see that a lot in crypto and blockchain. It's called FOMO, fear of missing out. And it's a real thing. And it's a weird fear driver. I think that partially makes sense Mark Zuckerberg did say he wanted his app, his kind of ecosystem to be more like WeChat, which is the first mm-hmm. super app. Hey, it's all in my book, you know, go check it out. It's not even out yet. I'm just playing with plugging things. But I think that kind of makes a bit of sense. He's like, I'm losing my edge. I'm just going to take a big jump out there. I think he's making a great jump. And so to get to that point about how they're adapting, I think Tencent has to adapt to this. I listened to a very interesting podcast episode about the number five guy in Tencent, who's the highest up foreigner. His name is David Wallerstein. Actually, strangely, went to my university, University of Washington, and runs the US office for Tencent. And he put Tencent's fundamental positioning very well to me, which I really liked. And I just never really fully got Tencent, and then it made it all click. And he goes, Tencent is where people interact. That's what we want to do. We want to help people interact with each other. Because I always just thought, I go, WeChat is the cure to loneliness. You know, that's what WeChat really is. But then actually, it's Tencent is the way that people interact. And the reason why Tencent got so into gaming, and it's now the world's largest gaming company, is they could, because they got on games, you know, because these are Tencent founders are pretty young. And they go, wow, people are interacting in these games in a way which is so rich. It's so much more than just text and messaging. They're interacting in these games with, I have an avatar, I got my clothes that kind of show my style and kind of how I see myself on the inside and kind of the things that I've, and I have a skull on me that shows that I was here in this one battle. And it's just such this really rich interaction. They go, we got to be a part of this. Gaming is social. It's such a big aspect of that. And there's a lot of people that play gaming as single player games and have been offline on PS4, Xbox, like all their lives have been gamers, but never gone online. They don't really see that particular facet of it. But I think, yeah, so I think Tencent's all on this. I think that it's that place where people interact. I think that's partially what the metaverse is. So I think it's mm-hmm. a part of the genes, the DNA of Tencent. And so I think, there have already kind of been adapting it a long time for the metaverse, and then even more recently kind of firing people from the cloud and things that they're finding irrelevant, I think, because they're going to start focusing more on metaverse aspects.
Okay. So good to look out for Tencent and what they're going to do over the next couple of months and years. They also have this annual event, right, Kevin, where they're always talking, Pony Ma is always talking about what's the next steps. Is there anything that was already hinted at, or... I think if Mark Zuckerberg, for example, would have done this transformation to Meta in the name earlier, I think in the 5-year plan in China, that's just would have even been named most likely, probably, you know, because they're so keen. I mean, I'm collaborating on certain projects with somebody who's working for the Chinese government as a foreigner in Europe. And they're now really into talents mm-hmm. and this fight for talents to bring them to China in certain areas. And in particular, when it comes to the digital economy, he said, it's a crazy, crazy run right now to drive packages, to put them into designated special zones, as are they put out. So mm-hmm. I think this is only gonna be the starting point. But Ade, how is it right now? You don't have that many Chinese well-educated people living abroad for studying and working. But how do you see the demand right now of skilled laborers coming in? Because this, you know, the borders are closed. Does that have any effect right now? I mean, I was living in Guangzhou. I love to hop on the islands in Thailand from here and there for a long weekend.
Yeah.
All these kinds of perks, of course, that were possible before, they're now not there anymore. So how do you see the situation with skilled labor?
And are you hiring?
The landscape in China in general, and especially in Guangzhou, actually has changed dramatically since COVID. What we've seen is that sort of the bar that the government has set for obtaining visas. I mean, first of all, any tourist visa just completely rejected up front. There are no tourist visas being issued at all. Business visas are only being issued to, you know, like CEO of the company kind of thing.
Wow.
Work visas seem to be okay, but you really have to you have to do extra effort to prove that this person is required. Mm-hmm. And if they deem that this person is not required for the operation of the business, they will reject the work visa. And so what I've seen, I mean, personally, just is an exodus of skilled people who are unable to or unwilling to justify their existence and also because of the fact that the perks of being able to travel freely, being able to go visit your home, I mean, that's been a huge driver for people leaving. People who, you know, friends of mine who said, you know, I haven't seen my family in 2 years. I don't know when I'm going to be able to see them again. I don't want to leave it up to the Chinese government. So I'm just going to leave and I'm going to move away, even though I've lived here for 5, 6, 7 years. You know, my time in China is done. And so the pool of international talent has shrunk considerably. And I do understand that, you know, maybe at the Beijing level, there's definitely going to be some, you know, they need to compete globally for talent, for sure. But I have to say, on the local level, it's got to be very difficult to attract talent because people who come here, they can't leave. You know, everyone's leaving, all the friends are leaving. And so the communities are shrinking. It's been a rough couple of years for sure.
Okay, so we're going to see where this is headed. I mean, we had a podcast with the commercial counselor of Austria in Beijing a couple of weeks ago, and he was just explaining the numbers game, why this zero COVID strategy. And I mean, it makes sense. And the most European nations also don't understand it, that, you know, it's a difference whether on such a dense place. I don't know, in this little neighborhood that we lived, there were 200,000 people. Right.
Yeah.
That was a 20th of what Guangzhou is. So I think there is a lot of common sense to what they're doing in their conservative approaches, especially right now. And that's sorry, Lisa, that I go there, but in Austria right now, they're opening, closing. Nobody knows what happens. So.
That's true.
Oh, I was just going to say another indicator of that kind of labor or that kind of talent shortage is I just had a call with my MBA in China, which is generally considered the top MBA in China. Like, I know 8th in the world on Financial Times, something it's called China Europe International Business School, or just CEBS. And when I went there, it was about 200 student cohort, about 50 of them international, 30 in-betweens, like kind of Chinese Americans that speak Chinese, and then about 120 Chinese. And they asked me to give a talk and they go, can you give it in Chinese? And then I go, wait a second, this is an international cohort. They're like, yeah, look, we only got about 5 to 8 foreigners here for this cohort and they're all fluent in Mandarin. And when I went there, there was 50 foreigners and I was the most fluent. And then there was one or two other that were kind of, there's one other guy that was about the same as me. And then there were 2 or 3 other that were kind of average. But then there was about 45 people that just didn't really speak Mandarin, but were happy to kind of take a crack at trying their hand at China. But now you just have hardcore Sinophiles like Ada and I are just kind of the only people that are still there. So that just kind of indicative of the times.
Yes, I guess that a lot of things have changed over the last 2 years or during the pandemic. And because you already spoke about scouting, hiring international talent, which kind of leads already to our last question, but I don't want to jump to the last question. I want to stick to the metaverse once again and kind of like wrap up about the thoughts we think how the metaverse might develop in the next years in China. And because gaming is a very big market, a huge market, and also this leads to the artificial reality, augmented reality. And this is not such a big thing in Europe in comparison to China. I would like to ask both of you, Kevin and Ade, why is the artificial reality so important in Asia? So why does the population is so into the gaming, having an artificial reality where they can have another personal life, kind of? So what is your point of view on that?
Yeah, that's a great question. We've actually spoken quite a bit on our podcast about synthetic media and also how popular it is in China, especially, and I guess generally in Eastern Asia, to, you know, to digitally edit photos after they're being taken. So you take a selfie, but then there's so many on the market, like Facetune kind of things that add makeup and even change the shape of your face to make yourself look more attractive. You know, it is very popular, and it's something that even someone who's been living here for so many years, you know, sort of goes against some of my sort of core sensibilities, you know, in terms of just, you know, if you see someone walking down the street and then you see their photo on WeChat and they look completely different, you know, I don't see how that makes sense. But for some people, that just is part of their everyday life. And that's fine. But I think there is definitely, I mean, I hate to sort of generalize, but I mean, you know, we are living in a city. I mean, Guangzhou is a city of 20 million people. You know, you are part of a mass. You are part of a, you get lost in the shuffle. You know, there are just so many people everywhere you go, and everyone looks, you know, similar. And it's just, it's really hard to stand out. It's really hard to find people that to connect to, you know, even though there's so many people around you, it really is, it can be a very lonely place. And so I think developing online communities, being able to sort of express yourself in these communities in different ways that you normally, that you wouldn't necessarily express yourself in real life, is a very attractive proposal for a lot of people. So I think there is a lot of space for companies to cater to that need. Yeah. And the issues that I have with the metaverse concept is the whole VR aspect and, you know, having to wear an actual headset. And to me, that seems a bridge too far.
It's a turnoff for Ade.
Yeah. I mean, how much of my day am I going to be wearing this headset and blocking out the rest of the world around me? I really don't see that being a more than a half an hour or even, you know, 20 minutes a day kind of thing. But that being said, I mean, you know, like Kevin was saying, metaverse isn't just that. It's a collection of digital services. It's a collection of sort of concepts that enable you to mix reality with the digital world. And that's where the growth will definitely come from. I mean, if we're talking about, you know, where is the metaverse going to go? It's going to go exactly as you're asking. It's going to go into places that let people interact, that let people get together, that let people express themselves. I mean, I'm looking forward to that for sure.
Great. Kevin, any thoughts on that from your side?
Yeah, I wanted to say something kind of interesting first is that idea of, you kind of said Chinese are interested in AR, artificial reality, and the other one being augmented reality. I think China, at least WeChat, does a good job of not jumping on buzzwords and kind of buzzing trends that are going on in the West. Because WeChat specifically, I can only really speak on WeChat's behalf because I work there. They kind of said, let's not look at what the competition is doing. Let's do what makes sense. Let's be thoughtful. And WeChat's always kind of tried to do that. And when you walk around the WeChat office, you kind of feel like, it almost feels like you're walking around like a philosophical forum or like a monastery. Everyone's kind of walking around slowly, kind of looking at their phones and kind of smoking cigarettes and talking, and everything's really slow and relaxed and thoughtful. So I guess that's why earlier I was saying, should Tencent jump on the metaverse? Does that make sense? I think it's a yes, but kind of what is the metaverse is another question. But so going back to artificial reality, augmented reality, interestingly, about 5 years ago when augmented reality was really hot, and I remember the only case I could think of that's good was IKEA's thing where they're like, look what your furniture looks like in your room before you buy it. That was brilliant. Almost everything else, and then Pokemon Go, those are the two. Everything else didn't really work, and it was all really tacky and gimmicky. And when I talk to like WeChat product managers about artificial reality or augmented reality, they go, I don't really see any reason to have it. They're just like, I don't get why you would have that. They are generally, at least the product managers, are kind of skeptical of that. Going back to this kind of the bigger concept of the metaverse and artificial reality and avatars, which I think Chinese are really into, I have an answer that maybe to a Westerner might just sound racist, but it's cultural knowledge and cultural sensitivity, is Chinese people are shy. They're kind of don't have amazing outgoing social skills. When they see Americans chatting to everyone in a room, they're like, wow, that person's so outgoing. Chinese are, of course, outgoing people, but commonly they're more shy. I mean, they spend the formative years of their lives studying for the Gaokao. And they're also really in tribe and keep things within their families and within their close friends. So they're really shy. But I've always noticed when Chinese people are online, they love like avatars having fun and kind of expressing themselves because they feel less threatened. And so it's a nice space for them to express themselves in a way that they don't really feel as comfortable to do in person. So I've kind of always noticed that. And that was something I saw 12 years ago in China with the QQverse, which was a Tencent kind of thing where everyone was chatting with each other and they had all these kind of avatars. And that was already a thing, 12 years ago with QQ coins and everything like that. So I think that's why they're a little more into it than we see in the West, because they feel a little more comfortable interacting online. And then my last point, I just have to say it, when Ade was talking about seeing people's avatars and then online and then seeing them in person and they can look really different, or their picture online, it reminds me of a phrase that I've heard, which is Tinder surprise. I don't know if you guys heard of that, where you see someone on Tinder and they look so much different than they do in real life. It's funny. It feels off topic, but I think it reflects something that's interesting here. Whereas people are going to have their avatars be more complimenting, be more in tune with how they want to appear than how they do in real life. And we're going to have some avatar surprise, like you see in Ready Player One, where the guy turns out to be a girl, but people are really different. I think that's kind of interesting. We already kind of see that playing out.
Yeah, just to sum this up, I mean, the hustle and bustle of a big city, of course, makes you seek those spaces that are your personal spaces where you can express yourself. That's one thing that I take from you. And the other point, I think, which is very valuable, is that on the one hand side, you're thinking about, okay, what is metaverse? What do I do with it? And on the other hand side, you got to be ready for it. And if not, China's not going to jump on it, somebody else will. And I dare to believe that the Chinese government will prolong its pragmatic approach towards technologies in this regard to be first mover, in particular in times where the war for talents, I don't want to talk about war, but it is an expression that is used, is going on globally in that sense. That was great. Lisa, what do you say? Should we push out our last question?
Definitely. Although I guess we could speak hours about the metaverse, avatars, but who knows, maybe we reunite at the podcast again in a year and talk about what has happened since now. But as you both help a lot of startups and founders and entrepreneurs, not only Chinese experts, we want to ask you our last question we ask all of our podcast guests. And this is, what's your personal success tip for startups that aim to enter new markets and want to grow fast during the ongoing pandemic?
Or other question, can you enter a market like China? Because we also had this discussion a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, so I guess I'll go first. You know, entering a market like China is difficult. I mean, I'll just say it right up front. You know, China has been going through a transformation from a sort of a developing nation to a world superpower. As part of that transition, they have positioned themselves as a standalone nation. They are, you know, going back to the five-year plan, purposefully making sure that they don't rely on anyone else for any of their essential needs as an economy and as a nation. And so coming into China, you know, you have to really be aware of what you're planning to provide, how big you're going to get, and the risks that come with going up against what the Chinese government may or may not be planning for the economy in the future. So there are ways to work with that future plan. There are ways to work against that future plan. So my advice would just be to, you know, take your time, go step by step, and try to, as much as possible, work with local governments, work with people on the ground who can give you some cultural insight.
Okay, my advice, in a word, it's test. Just test whatever you're doing. Test it. In a phrase, it's make, break, repeat. And the break part is testing. So I did a startup with Ade as my mentor and client, and it failed. I failed at every part, every stage I failed, but I learned so much. And I think for me, the biggest takeaway for me and my wife, who is my co-founder, who was ourselves doing it together, was we just didn't test quickly enough in talking to potential clients. And so you're talking about entering a new market. I don't know if you can go to that market. If you can get friends, if it's China, talk to Chinese in your country, talk to Chinese there, talk about your idea, see how, just kind of gauge every kind of reaction they have. And this is, it's easy to talk about. It's difficult to do. I know, because I had all the training to test and I didn't test because I'm a perfectionist and I go, no, it's not ready yet. It's not ready yet. And then when I was 8 months, 1 year in, and I was showing it to them, they go, we don't even like any of this. And you have to show it and test it before it's even good, just when it's just a general concept. And I think we have Austrians, we're talking with the Austrian network, and you guys are part of the Germany and Germanic community. Germans are known for perfection. So I think testing, similar to for me, would be a big challenge for, I can imagine, for Germanic community. And you got to just have that concept, write out a few outline notes, and then start talking to people, just testing it, making a drawing, an image of your whatever idea you have, showing it to people. So test, test, test. That's what I say.
Thank you. And I think this goes back also to Chabudor, I don't know if I pronounce it correctly, but like this concept, and it translates in Austrian, it translates to Bastjo. It's like, it's okay. It's not perfect. It's not ready, but it's okay enough, right? But you're the Chinese experts, but that was one of the first concepts that I learned in China.
Yeah.
Which is go and test early, right? So that's what we also do now with our own new startup that we're working on. We actually went on the market a year before we had our full production ready, just to test it with more than 100 clients, right? So, and I think this is something that I took that from China to implement in Europe, which is funny. But this is a concept I think that every startup listener that is a regular to our podcast could also note down to be like, okay, doesn't have to be ready, don't have to be perfect, go out, do it. Otherwise, you're not quick enough.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think with this being said, we had great tips. A great talk. Thank you very much, Ade and Kevin, for this crossover episode. And for all our listeners, listen to the great fire chat as well. And thank you both. All the best.
Vielen Dank.
Yeah, hopefully see you soon.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was a pleasure.
That was wonderful.
Love to do it again. Thanks.
Liebe Zuhörerinnen und Zuhörer, wir sind schon wieder am Ende unserer heutigen Folge angelangt. Wir freuen uns, wenn ihr auch nächste Woche wieder mit dabei seid bei Asia Expansion Explained.
Das war Asia Expansion Explained, Ihr Podcast für eure Internationalisierung nach Asien. Ihr habt Fragen, Anregungen, Wünsche? Dann schreibt uns unter podcast@gin-austria.com. Weitere Infos zu den Startup-Services von Global Incubator Network Austria findet ihr auf gin-austria.com. Ready for the next steps? Go big, go global, go Asia. Dieser Podcast ist eine Kooperation zwischen GEM Solutions und dem Global Incubator Network Austria, ein Förderungsprogramm des Austria Wirtschaftsservice und der Österreichischen Forschungsförderungsgesellschaft.